looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The idea that people have an inner gender that's not made up of matter, it's not biological in nature, it's not something you can look at under a microscope, whether it's an organized religion or not, it's born out of a religious worldview.
A phrase like God's new Israel, a chosen people, city on a hill, these words are taken away from their rightful owners and turned to the purposes of the modern nation state.
The Ten Commandments guide us away from self-chosen good works, and they direct us to works that God has commanded for the well-being and service of the neighbor.
In the church that is gathered around the name of Jesus and the body and blood of Jesus, who is gathered around the Lord's gifts of baptism and the preaching of this good news and the forgiveness of sins, Jesus is here. Jesus is with us.
This is Flo from Idaho. Locked and loaded Lutheran ladies love listening to the straight shooters at Issues, etc.
In this age of sexual revolution, sex has come to be categorized. You have your makeup sex, your breakup sex, you have your rebound sex. They're all different kinds of categories there. What about entitlement sex? It is not a good thing. It's a terrible thing, and it's much in the news. We're going to be talking about entitlement sex with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute, here in the first few minutes of the program. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., live on this Monday afternoon, July the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation on entitlement sex, we'll mark the fourth anniversary of Obergefell, the case that gave us same-sex marriage. And we'll talk about consent-based marriage with Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation. Then in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Pastor Paul McCain joins us for our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We'll be in Luther's Small Catechism, talking about Christian questions with their answers. Feel free to join us. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about entitlement sex, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State, and a recent column for the National Catholic Register titled, What Do Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein, and Theodore McCarrick Have in Common? Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd. Great to be back.
So you define this for us. What is entitlement sex?
Well, it's basically the idea that I'm entitled to whatever sexual activity I want. And that's the mentality of the sexual revolution. Everybody's entitled to do whatever they want. And if you are rich and powerful, you can get away with a lot. And you can make it seem like people are consenting to you by messing around with the terms of consent, so to speak, you know? So consent is a very weak reed to balance out the power that the powerful receive from the idea that everybody's entitled.
So does this apply, this term apply evenly to the three people that you've recently written about, Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein, and Cardinal Theodore McCarrick?
He's not a cardinal anymore.
That's
Mr.
right.
McCarrick. We worked long and hard to get that title stripped off of him. Yes, actually, I think it does. It applies perfectly well to all three of them, even though one's a homosexual predator and the other two, as far as I know, are strictly heterosexual predators. They occupied a position of power. They had considerable power over other people. And so they could make it seem like somebody consented, even when, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's victims were teenagers and lower. I mean, one time somebody quote, gave him 3 12-year-old girls as a birthday present. I mean, how does a man like that think that that's consensual, you know? But that's the mentality that we've all been fed, that sex is normal, sex is good, sex is wonderful, as long as everybody consents, we're entitled to do whatever we want. And I maintain that that attitude disempowers and disarms victims, people who would want to say, well, no, actually, you know, no, I don't want to. I just want to be a towel girl at this resort. I don't really want to have sex with you. You know, that power imbalance is so easy to manipulate once people, both the victim and the victimizer, if they both believe in the entitlement position, then it's very hard for the victim to resist, and it's very easy for the predator to prey.
Why is this idea that, you know, these men were either in terms of monetary wealth or in terms of power within their spheres of influence or both?
Right.
They had enough capital, either literal or figurative, to buy their way out of any situation so that they could live inconsequentially when it came to their sexual misbehavior. Why does that explanation not suffice? Oh, these are just rich guys doing what rich guys do, buying their way out of the consequences for their actions.
See, I think that there's something to that, Todd, and I will admit there's something to that. When we first started working on this concept of the victims of the sexual revolution, back around 2013, the Ruth Institute really started focusing on the victims and survivors of the sexual revolution. I literally said that to myself. I said, you know, rich guys have always gotten away with stuff. You know, I'm not going to deal with sexual abuse because it's not fair to blame that on the sexual revolution, because that's always been around. And to some extent, that's true. And if I'm honest, Todd, I got to say, I didn't want to deal with sexual abuse because it's nasty and it's difficult. And, you know, I'd just rather do almost anything else but have to deal with it. But over time, I came to see that we're all swimming in this kind of cultural soup that says sex is an entitlement. And if you say no to sex, there's something wrong with you. And you have to offer an explanation for yourself. And young girls have been feeling that for a long time. I started feeling that when I was a college girl. That kind of pressure started coming on. And it has only gotten worse since. You're supposed to be sex positive. Campuses have Yale Sex Week and these type of things, which are basically big advertisements for pornography and sexual activity. So the natural mechanisms that would have empowered a person to say, no, that's not what I want to do, that has all been stripped away. And so it's simply the individual woman or the individual young boy or the individual weak person, male or female, whether they're a minor or legally an adult, it's that individual weaker person standing there saying, no, I don't want to be part of it. The burden of proof has shifted to the person who says no, not to the person who says yes. Then you add to that the whole layer of sexual enthusiasm that is all through society, that being sex positive is what we're all supposed to be, and that's celebrated, that's endorsed. You take somebody who has a predatory instinct and who has a lot of power, there's no brakes on that person anymore. And then you take what we saw in the Catholic Church, and which I think we're now seeing with the revelations with Epstein, the rich and powerful are all working together in concert. You know, there seems to be a network of homosexual clergy in the Catholic Church that are covering for each other. And there's certainly a network of people who protected Epstein and covered for him. Look at how many years it has taken for indictments to come down and for him to really be put away. People have known for a long time, going back to Bill and Hillary Clinton knew all about it, you know? I mean, this has been going on a long time, and it's taken so much to put a stop to this guy's predation. That's because the network of the powerful is reinforced by the ideology of the sexual revolution, which says sex is for everybody, sex is great, there's no consequences worth thinking about, and if you think otherwise, there's something wrong with you. That just shifts the whole balance of power towards the predator.
In that vein, I mean, sometimes it's a web of guilt. Like in the Roman Catholic Church, there are people who share in the same sins as Theodore McCarrick.
Right.
And were involved with them. And he was powerful enough to know this and to use it against them if necessary. So there's that web of guilt kind of mutually.
Yes.
But then there's also the things that are hard to explain, like why people not involved in the system would still cover for people like
right. Now, you know, one thing that has come out is the extent to which Epstein blackmailed people. So it's a kind of variation of the guilt thing that you just mentioned. So there have been several people who have reported that Epstein had cameras throughout his posh resort type places, his homes, all of his fancy homes that he had and stuff. He had cameras all over the place. So some rich, powerful guy comes in there, takes advantage of the 13-year-old that Epstein presents him with. Well, he's got it on film now, you know. So he's blackmailable. So there's that whole aspect of it. But how do you explain the building manager of the apartment building where all of these so-called models lived? You know, how do you explain the church secretary not telling? I think that's what you're asking now, right, Todd? What are they thinking? How is that working? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm starting to see hints of it, that to blow the whistle as a victim or somebody who's just seen something, you know, you're not the victim yourself, but you've seen the incriminating letters or you've seen people coming and going and so on. Those people who rock the boat of these kind of networks, these kind of sexual systems, those people bear a lot of harassment and take a lot of grief. And I'm working with a family right now who live not very far from us over in Lafayette, Louisiana. And they're, you know, they're enduring some serious harassment. I'm just starting to see why people don't come forward, you know, because it's hard.
So should those who are deeply concerned about the underlying causes for this, this sense of entitlement that now that I think about it, it really is pervasive in the sexual revolution. It's kind of like our civil right or something.
Yeah, yes.
And the right extends to be able to do this without any kind of consequences. Should those who are concerned about this, how should we address this?
Well, I think one thing you have to do is that I think I would call on everybody to make a serious examination of conscience about your whatever your own sexual sins might be, and not just your personal sexual sins, but whatever your kind of attachment to the sexual revolution might be. I mean, for me, it was contraception. For the longest time, I didn't want to admit contraception, that there was a problem with contraception or that it had been harmful to society or anything like that. I didn't want to admit it. And this, Todd, this is after my husband and I had been through years of infertility. You know, we hadn't used it in years, but I was hanging on to the idea that this is a good thing and wasn't so bad and so on and so forth. But for us, for somebody else, it might be that they're hanging on to their same-sex attraction and thinking, well, I can be a good Christian and still be gay. I'm celibate, so it's not so bad, but I'm gay. God made me this way. Anything that you're hanging on to, I would say you need to let go of it. You need to let go of whatever you're hanging on to. And the reason I say that is that when somebody says to you, well, it's not so bad what so-and-so is doing, you're going to be tongue-tied. You're going to blink right at the moment that you should be staring the guy down, you know. And I've just seen this happen in conversations so many times that people want to say, well, they want to go back to what you started with, which is it's always been here. There's nothing so special today, even where I think in their heart they know something's really wrong with today. You know, that there's something much more seriously wrong. People are hanging on to their own little corner of it. I think we need to just go after it root and branch, and live the purest gospel that we can and know that what Jesus was trying to tell us to do was something that was good and life-giving and that would protect the interests of children and men and women and everyone to the love and respect of their spouses, the respect the rights of children to have a relationship with their parents, that everybody's equal in the Christian system. Every child has a right to their mom and dad. Every husband and wife has the right to expect fidelity from their spouse, you know? That's a true system of equality, and I think we just need to have a full-throated defense of the thing.
We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Robag Morse about entitlement sex. A little bit later in our conversation, we'll talk about some stiffer penalties for sexual offense with her as well. She's founder and president of the Ruth Institute and senior research fellow in economics at the Acton Institute. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
We're talking about entitlement sex with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Jennifer, one thing I noticed that is common in all three of these cases, whether it is Epstein or Weinstein or McCarrick, there is kind of an atmosphere of permission that eventually takes over. That if the big guy, if the people who are in seats of power can get away with these kind of things, then I can get away with it too, at least at my level. What are your thoughts there?
I think that's exactly right. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about the atmosphere of entitlement, you know. I mean, if you think about the idea, I'm entitled to sex. Really? Who's required to provide you with sex? You know, honestly, it doesn't make any sense. But what you just said, I think, is the mental dynamic that gets going. And predatory sex becomes normalized. The idea that you're entitled becomes normalized. And you're off to the races. It's the law of the strongest. And looking at the conduct of these three men shows you just how grim the law of the strongest can be and just how weak the standard of consent can be as a protective factor for weaker people.
Does it help also explain pornography and its pervasiveness? Because if I can't find someone who will fulfill my entitlement for sex, then I seek it virtually.
You know, the role of pornography in all this is really complicated but devastating in a way, because I think what you just said is right. Pornography promotes the illusion of entitlement. And if the real live woman you have in the room with you isn't satisfactory, you can just turn on the video and masturbate in front of the computer screen. And it's a lot easier to do that than to have to put up with her, you know, and maybe she's got bad breath or she doesn't look as good as that lady on the screen, you know. That has taken a tremendous toll on people's ability to be in actual relationship with actual people. It's a huge cause of divorce. If you talk to priests in the confessional, they'll tell you it's the number one sin they hear, right? And those are guys who have enough sense to go to confession, never mind the guy on the street, you know? So it's a huge problem, and it does feed the idea that sexual release is something everybody's entitled to.
So you had, until I think this afternoon, been planning to attend a hearing for a sentencing hearing or a consideration sentencing hearing down there in Louisiana. Why were you planning to go to that hearing?
So here's the situation. Here's what happened. A priest in his 70s, who was in his 70s at the time this happened, molested a 15-year-old boy, and that boy was the son of a deacon in the church. So this was this. He was a close family friend. So the depth of the betrayal is really profound. So the boy finally told his parents what had happened. Took him 3 years, but he finally told his parents what had happened. And the priest was arrested, and he confessed. And at the end of April, he was sentenced to 7 years out of a possible 10-year maximum allowable by law. So there's no question that he's guilty because he confessed. And so then he requested a hearing to reconsider his sentence. Well, you know, it hasn't been that long since he was sentenced in the first place. What new evidence has come forward? From the family's perspective, it feels like, you know, just ripping the scab off of a wound that has barely healed in the first place. So we were going to be back in court to hear the case for why this guy shouldn't be in for 7 years or whatever it is. And so a bunch of us wrote letters to the judge and said, you know, there's no new evidence. There's no new news here. There's no reason to reconsider. If you're going to reconsider, you should give him the maximum instead of 7 years. And just today, literally just today, the victim's father was called on the phone and said, we're postponing this hearing. We're going to postpone it until September. And I'm thinking, first of all, why are you even reconsidering the guy's sentence in the first place when there's no new evidence? This is coming, of course, from the perpetrator and his attorney. They are the ones asking for this, driving this ship. Why is this even a thing that the sentence should be reconsidered? And now this close to the hearing, you're going to postpone the hearing? You know, it has the feel of a kind of harassment of the victims. And I don't understand why the judge is allowing this to go on. You know, you can blame the Catholic Church for a lot of things, but this one's on the judge. And I don't understand what's going on there. But no, I'm not going to go over to Lafayette tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, as I had planned. But I'll be there in September, and there may be a lot of other people there in September. I don't think you guys bought yourself anything if you think you're going to get away from public opinion by pushing the can down the road.
Why in the world is the sentence so light? 7 to 10.
You know, I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that. The statutory maximum is 10 years. That's my understanding. And why it's 7 years rather than the full 10, I don't know. The judge sounded like a good guy when he delivered the sentence. He said, you know, there are some things that you just can't tolerate, and so we're going to throw the book at you and put you in jail. Believe it or not, there are people in the community coming forward and saying, oh, Father's such a nice guy. Why is this happening to him? And it's like, I can't understand it, Todd. Really, I can't understand it. So this phase of the process is on the civil authority. This part's not the church's fault. The church has done a lot of things it shouldn't have done, but well, I don't know what's up with the judge. I really don't.
Is there maybe a larger cloud surrounding that entitlement atmosphere that you had mentioned earlier, which is maybe the assumption, I'm not saying this about this judge in particular, but the assumption that these kinds of crimes, and that's what we're talking about here, a priest molesting a boy, these kinds right. of crimes, you know, while we don't want to tolerate them, they're not that serious. When we know full well, Jennifer, that lives are destroyed by these kinds of crimes.
I know. I think that's right. And I think here's where a parallel with the Epstein case is instructive. Because somehow people on the civil side were interfering with the full prosecution of Epstein. It simply can't be the case that justice moved along in a routine fashion in his case. You're just looking at the whole way the thing proceeded. There are obviously people who wanted him to be covered for somehow, you know, and who they are and so on, I wouldn't presume to say. But there is this kind of attitude that, it's not that big of a deal. Nobody died, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, Epstein himself even said, I'm not a predator. I'm an offender. It's the difference between murder and somebody who swipes a bagel. You know, really? Really? You're having sex with teenage girls whom you brought into your home under false pretenses, and that's like swiping a bagel? Really, buddy? You know? So I don't know what's up with this judge, but I think that the body of Christ And I say it this way because a lot of the churches have problems, you know. If we're counting on the civil authorities to solve this for us, it's not going to happen. Because a lot of the civil authorities are corrupted by the same kinds of sins. Let's put it in pure biblical terms. We're corrupted by our own sins. Therefore, we cover for the sins of others. Just plain old slavery to sin. And therefore, we're corrupt as a result of that. And if we think that the civil authorities are going to bail us out, that's not going to happen. They're corrupt too, you know. In fact, my nightmare scenario, I have thought of this many times. My nightmare scenario is an attorney general of a state making a side deal with the clergy of the Catholic Church. You know, I don't want to see Lisa Madigan and Cardinal Supich making a deal. I don't want to hear about that, you know. I want transparency on the civil side and the ecclesial side. And, you know, I don't know what's going on here in Lafayette. Small town, should be clean, but there's something odd about this judge kicking the can down the road. I just don't get it.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, senior research fellow in economics at the Acton Institute. She's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State, and a recent column for the National Catholic Register titled, What Do Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein, and Theodore McCarrick Have in Common? Read it and find a link to the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thanks.
Thank you.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is with us on the other side of the break. We're near the fourth anniversary of the Supreme Court case Obergefell that gave us nationwide same-sex marriage and may, philosophically, have given us a lot more. We'll find out why after this.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran liberal arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.